This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's me, but I'm not Patsy. I'm Bria, filling in for Patsy at Joy on Paper. And today we've got special guests, two science fiction authors who I will be interviewing. And I am so excited to be here. And thank you to Big Ed in the studio for getting me oriented, as this is my very first time guest hosting at Joy on Paper. You might have heard my voice before because I am the Science Fiction Book Buzz special correspondent. So there is actually a book buzz that we are going to play in anticipation of our very first guest. And the book buzz is for Vigil, Inferno Season by Lewis Knight. And Big Ed, are we ready to play that book buzz? Let's hear it.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 release in print and ebook, Vigil, Inferno Season, Book 2 in the Cyber Knight Saga by Bard Constantine. Readers who start with Vigil, Book 1, will discover how the Cataclysm caused the end of the world as Hellraiser soldier Jet Wolf knew it and follow his transformation into high-tech hero Vigil. Now that you've had your briefing, let's download the book buzz. In a sinister dystopian future that blends the noir, superhero, and cyberpunk genres, a man out of time fights behind a mask in the crime-ridden streets of New York, where corrupt and brutal villains, robots with electro-lasers, and synthoid clones roam. 300 years after Jet Wolf fell into cryosleep, he awakens and stumbles into a society split in two. Havencore is a closed-off dome for the elites, and all others scrape a living on the outside, where crime lords and gangs rule largely unchecked. When we pick up in Book 2, Vigil pairs up with Spitfire, a street-smart teenager who joins his growing team to battle Diabolus, a trifecta of crime syndicates dealing in stolen memories, the latest drug craze at the Hayes Parlors. The trail leads Vigil and his team deep into the underbelly, an abyss beneath the city where nothing is as it seems. This masterful neo-pulp mashup with jaw-dropping twists would be one binge-worthy television series if the right producer picks it up. My casting choice for Vigil would be between Henry Simmons, aka Mac from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Mike Coulter, who played Luke Cage in the Netflix series and currently stars in CBS's Evil. Bard Constantine is a pen name for Alabama author Lewis Knight, a self-described neo-pulp author who writes genre-blended, action-oriented pulp fiction with a kick. People come for the action and stay for the appealing characters. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay, now that you've heard about the book and a little bit about the author, Ed, do we have Lewis Knight on the line? Lewis, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you doing?
I am so excited to talk to you, Lewis. It is a pleasure. And we need to go ahead and clear up the name change. So when I first bought your book, your pen name was Bard Constantine. That's not the case anymore. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm going by my actual, name now, Lewis Knight. And it was really a name change just out of ownership, really, trying to take control of the business aspects of it, and that kind of, taking that ownership puts me in a more serious business-minded state of mind for that.
Oh, I understand that completely. Even though Bard Constantine is quite a cool-sounding name, you happen to have a great author name already with Lewis Knight. And I think that going ahead back to your actual name, I completely relate. I use my real name also for my writing. Tell me about... First of all, we're in the Haven World universe. Is that correct? When we're when we're looking at Vigil, tell me a little bit about that world and how you started creating it.
Yeah, Haven World actually came out of the series that I was writing called the Troubleshooter series, and that's kind of a it's a genre blend where it's a, like a private eye series, but it's placed in a science fiction world. And when I was writing the Troubleshooter series, I knew that it was set in a world of havens. And what havens are city-sized constructs that were built to survive the cataclysm, which was an event that basically ended the world as we know it. So in the Troubleshooter series, we're only looking at one haven, and everything in that series takes place in that haven. So I really wanted to open it up and explore it after I finished that series, and that's when I started writing other Haven World novels.
Okay, and that's where Vigil came to life for you, was coming out of those Troubleshooter series?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, opening up into taking a look at actual Haven World, the actual setting, allowed me to write other novels. There's Vigil came out of that. There's a novel called The Gunner Chronicles that came out of that. There's a novel called Sin City that came out of that, and another novel called the B Team. All of those take place in Haven World, and they're all different styles of writing. You know, like Vigil's more of a superhero, like a futuristic superhero story. So, you know, it really opened up things for me. It allowed things to be opened up for me to explore different types of characters, different types of writing, and just have a blast basically writing this stuff.
Well, and as a reader, I had a blast reading the Vigil series that you have so far. Vigil Book 1, I'm live in the studio on Facebook and the YouTube channel. So I'm holding up your book right now, Vigil, the first book in the series. And then the second book was my book buzz was based on, Vigil Inferno Season. Now, there eventually you have plans to write a third book. Is that correct?
That's right. So far, I've got four books in mind, and then we'll see where it goes from there. I've even got some spinoffs that you know might come later on down the line. But for right now, I've got a kind of a four book outline for it, and then we're going to see, you know, where things go from there. So there's definitely a third book upcoming, and I can't wait to get to it, because the Vigil world is probably maybe my favorite of the series coming out of Haven World right now. It's just a load of fun to write.
Oh, wonderful. It's so much fun to read. And your character, can you just talk a little bit about Vigil, the character Jet Wolf, who takes on this persona of Vigil? Can you talk to us about some of the just ideas behind where this character came from, or even inspirations from other maybe authors or other pop culture, anything like that that you can tell us? Because I have to say, he is one fascinating character.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Vigil, I came up with the actual story years ago, and it's been probably 20 years since the inception. It actually started off as a comic book character that I was writing and illustrating. And that's where it actually started from. I was actually just doing it kind of for fun. And then later on, after I started writing seriously, then I went back to the sketches and all that, and then kind of brought them to a life in a novel form. But basically, Vigil is, if you take a look at a Batman stock character, you know, there's a lot of Batman influence to him.
Yes, I can see that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, you kind of take Batman and then place him in a dystopian future world, and kind of blend some of the tech from Iron Man, and then that's how you get Vigil. Not so much the character, but the actual design and influences from, you know, Jet Wolf himself just kind of comes from a lot of ideas that I had from characters and, you know, stories that I haven't even written yet. He's got a lot of history, and that history comes from stories that are set before Haven World, you know. So he's got a kind of a fascinating background where he can't, you know, he's coming from the end of a civilization and then reborn basically into this future. And from there he adopts this mantle of a superhero because he's basically lost everything, and that's what he suddenly finds himself into, where he is able to do something that he really cares about and that basically keeps him going because he's basically lost everything else. So it's a fascinating idea, and I really had a lot of fun writing it.
The way you describe that mashup of taking Batman, a little bit of Iron Man, I can appreciate as just a fan of some of those comic book superheroes, that the what you've done even with those inspirations. He's a very unique character. So for those who are looking to pick up I would say he feels like a superhero, but he's also very flawed, which some of the best superheroes are, I would say. And and just the past that you mentioned, you so wonderfully write kind of those pieces that fill in where you start to understand where this character comes from. As a writer myself, I have to say I was so impressed as I read your book, just the times that you chose to offer a little backstory but not go too far back. Can you share with us a little bit about your writing background, when you started writing? When did you know you wanted to be a writer?
Okay, yeah. Really, as I mentioned earlier, when I was growing up, I really wanted to be a comic book artist. And that's kind of where a lot of my attention was. It was with the art. And it didn't work out as far as being an artist because the competition was so stiff. It was, you know, and, you know, like writing is kind of like that too. Mm-hmm. You know, where, especially with the self-publishing world, where there's just a ton of writers out there, you know. But at the time, and this is going all the way back to the 90s, you know, I went to Comic-Con and just saw so many talented artists out there, and they were all in line waiting for a chance to talk to an editor. And, you know, it just really made me see that, man, it's going to be super hard to actually mm-hmm. try to break into comic book artistry. And it kind of shattered those dreams at the time.
Okay.
You know, but yeah, but what happened was that I had so many characters that I had created on my own, and I really started exploring the story aspect of those, and that kind of pulled me into loving writing more than I did the art, you know. So then I started writing more and more, and that kind of took off from there. You know, my writing started with fantasy. I wrote a fantasy novel first, and that kind of broke me into the writing, you know, actually what writing meant, because a lot of people don't understand that it's, you know, it's hard work. It's not easy, and there's a craft that you have to learn. So I kind of broke my teeth on that, and from the fantasy then I started writing the troubleshooter novels, and then it just grew from there.
Oh, how wonderful. And even though you and I have never met in person, we have a little bit of a writing connection, because we are both part of an author consortium called the Alvarium Experiment. Can you talk about how did you come to be part of the Alvarium Experiment, and tell us a little bit about your writing contribution to that collaboration?
Yeah, so, you know, as you know, social networking has kind of opened up a lot of things, and, you know, allowed, you know, connections that you normally wouldn't have made, you know. So I just kind of connected with, I think it was Charles Cornell. And, you know, just through talking online, he got me into it. You know, he told me that there was this experiment that he and some other authors were doing, And that was the Prometheus saga. And, you know, I was able to tie in one of my stories, which was it was an aberration story, which is actually one of my few horror sci-fi novels. And I was able to tie in a short story into that, and, you know, was able to connect with authors like you and the others, which was I think there was about, what, 14 of us, 12 of us somewhere?
Yes, yeah.
On that first one?
That very first one. I want to say, yeah, you're getting the numbers definitely ballpark. I'm trying to remember if it was 12 or 14. 14 sounds right, but that first anthology that we did as a group was so much fun. I mean, what an fascinating experiment we all got to be part of with what Charles A. Cornell and Ken Pelham, both Florida authors at the time. Now Charles is actually in England and Ken is still here in Florida, but it's just expanded to, you know, fellow authors like you who are in other states, and it's very neat to see how that experiment has continued. Now, I will share that as fantastic as all the stories are, and I do have a story in the Prometheus saga as well, your story was my absolute favorite from that anthology. And I was so excited to talk to you because I thought, oh, I wonder if Lewis knows that I just absolutely loved his story in that anthology. It was so well written. It was so captivating. And it was authors like you that I felt really elevated our anthology. Authors like Deco Offenord, and I might be butchering her last name, but I know her first name pronunciation is Deco because I had to ask her. And some of the others who are just, talk about high caliber quality writing, and many of these stories got awards. So to have you be part of our anthology was really wonderful. And then how great that you could tie in a short story, because we're talking short story collection where each of the authors wrote a short story. You could tie that into your other novels. That's really great.
Right. Well, you know, first of all, thanks so much. You know, it means a lot to hear that from you. You know, because writers, you know, we kind of stay in a bubble, and it's hard to even know, like, the impact that your book stories might have. You know, so it's always good to to hear some feedback, because, you know, that's not something that you get very often. You know, a lot of times you see sales, you know, and you're like, okay, so people are reading, but to actually get feedback is actually nice, because you know, you're like, oh, okay, so this did hit, you know,
right?
You know, this hit, you know, so.
Because someone can be someone can sit and enjoy your story. If they don't reach out to you with a review or with even just an email as a writer, yeah, you're right. We don't know if people are enjoying our work, even if they're buying it. And tell us some of the ways that if readers who are looking for your books, can you tell us a little bit? You've got this fantastic website. Oh, my goodness. Speaking of being an artist as well, I follow you on Instagram, and you have these fantastic artistic posts that you post about your characters and the worlds you're writing in. Talk a little bit about how can readers see what you're doing currently and see some of this amazing artwork that you're doing with some of your website and these different social media platforms where they can reach out to you. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So, you know, first of all, my writing is mainly science fiction and fantasy. You know, I call it gritty futures and epic fantasy, and that's basically my lane. You know, so if you're into science fiction, or if you're into mixed genres, you know, and action oriented stories, then, you know, that's what I write. You know that's where I'm at. So
you used the phrase neo-pulp. Is that a phrase that well describes, I would say, some of your writing that I've read?
Yeah, neo-pulp. So, you know, fast-paced you know, fast-paced stories, dynamic characters. Basically, you know, there's a lot of action. You know, I kind of think of my writing as cinematic, you know, because it's influenced a lot by, you know, movies, you know, my favorite films. My brother always, you know, he's like the only person that catches a lot of, like, Easter eggs that I drop in from, like, movies and other stories and things like that. He'll be like, you know, hey, you know, I recognize that from this film or that film or whatever, you know. So, you know, I kind of sneak in stuff like that, too, you know. And, you know, because I'm a big fan of movies, science fiction, fantasy, and, you know, everything in between as far as, like, cinema and all that stuff. So, you know, cinema has a direct impact on my work. So, but nightvisionbooks.com is the website, and you know, all my books are there, all the information, different links to other websites, you know, because I've got like a separate website for the fantasy and some of the other stuff there.
Can you speak to that a little bit? What, tell us why, as an author, you have one website that's your science fiction and one that's your fantasy. We still have a couple minutes.
Sure. You know, I mean, certain readers read certain things. So you know, people that read the fantasy might not read the science fiction. You know, it just might not be their thing. You know, so you know, I kind of keep those separate. You know, because like fans of the Shadow Battles, which is the fantasy series, it's called Shadow Battles is the name of the series. But people that read that might not read some of the science fiction. People that read some of the science fiction might not read some of the fantasy. So,
right,
you know, it just
right,
kind of
yes,
keeps things.
Yeah,
it just kind of keeps things separate and makes it easy to follow. But as far as the Instagram, that's where I'm posting a lot of my art. You know, and AI art has really opened up things to be able to, you know, kind of share a lot of what, you know, I think that characters look like, settings, and then it allows me to have a visual representation of some of this stuff from these books. Like, I'm really kind of putting a lot of the fantasy stuff out right now because I'm actually writing the next fantasy story. So I've been posting a lot of art from that series on Instagram, along with some of the science fiction and Haven World stuff as well. But AI art has really opened things up for me to be able to create a lot of these representations of the characters, of the settings, and things like that I can share with the with the readers of these books, you know, because there's so much visually that readers can take a look at. And on my Instagram, it is Lewis _Knight. So it's Lewis Knight, but there's a double underscore in between that name. And so it's Lewis _ Knight on Instagram. And it's been a lot of fun sharing these visual images with the, you know, with readers that, you know, that they can take a look at and, you know, kind of get an idea and a feel for how these characters look.
Thank you, Lewis, so much. You have absolutely made my day to be able to chat with you and talk more about writing. So for those who are listening, nightvisionbooks.com is K-N-I-G-H-T, as in night, like think medieval night, not nighttime night, when you're looking up Night Vision Books to check out Lewis and all his latest. So thank you again for visiting Joy on Paper today, Lewis, and we will hopefully have you on again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And Big Ed, is this the time that we go to ads? Sounds great.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
It's me, but I'm not Patsy. I'm Bria, guest hosting for Joy on Paper, and it is an absolute honor to be here in the studio. We just had a fantastic interview with author Lewis Knight, and now we are going to be talking to another fabulous science fiction author. And first, I want to introduce you to her book, The 11th Gate, by Nancy Kress. Big Ed, do we have that science fiction book buzz ready? Okay.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 release in audiobook, The 11th Gate by Nancy Kress, a multiple Nebula and Hugo Award-winning author. Blackstone Audio produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Braden Wright. The novel is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. When an explosion near a newly discovered stargate kills citizens of Paragoy Corporation, the first interstellar war breaks out between the corporation and the Landry Libertarian Alliance. The person responsible confesses to Rachel Landry, the head of the alliance, explaining it was an accident. With the fate of the eight worlds at stake, Rachel partners with Philip Anderson, a citizen of the neutral world Polyglot. Philip, a philosopher, undergoes a risky procedure to expand the functions of his brain in hopes of connecting with the quantum realm in order to discover the secrets of the stargates. Meanwhile, the military commander of Paragoy Corporation, Luis Martinez, battles amongst the stars against a warmongering granddaughter of Rachel Landry, despite Rachel's protests to end the fighting. Luis captures another granddaughter of Rachel's, and their initial hatred of each other morphs into something else as the truth about the war, the stargates, and the nature of reality itself emerges. The high-speed political sci-fi thriller offers an equal mix of high-octane interstellar battle, mind-stretching scientific and philosophical musings about the nature of the universe, and thorough character studies of flawed protagonists seeking their version of utopia. Author Nancy Kress has written 33 books, and her work has won 6 Nebulas, 2 Hugos, a Sturgeon, and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay, so do we have Nancy on the line? Nancy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hello, Bria.
Hi, I am so thrilled to talk to you. And right now I have a camera on me and I'm holding up your book, The 11th Gate, so that the viewers on YouTube and Facebook can see this fabulous book. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself as a writer and what you're currently writing?
Well, I've been a science fiction writer for over 40 years, and I really don't know why. I know that sounds very strange, but when I started to write, it came out science fiction. I had always read science fiction, but I'd always read everything. So I really don't know. A lot of my career just sort of happened. I would do this book, and then I would think, oh, that's a good idea. I'll do this other book. But none of it was actually very well planned.
So would you describe yourself more as a pantser versus a plotter as a writer?
Yes, but I've gotten to be more of a plotter as I got older. Pantsing works really well for short stories, but for novels, it has to all hang together. And after killing a certain number of novels because they never came all together, I realized that novels need to be a lot more plotted.
That's what I'm doing now. That makes sense. So for the listeners who are maybe new writers wondering what we're talking about, when we talk about outlining or preparing a novel ahead of time, that is that you make a plan for what's going to happen in the novel. You have often things like character sheets of who the characters are, and all that is potentially planned before the book is even written. And pantsing is the idea of flying by the seat of your pants and just kind of going with what the muse delivers as you write. So I relate to what you're sharing because I, as a writer, I love the pantsing, that sensation that you're just kind of going with the story that, in my case, I say that God is giving me at that moment. And then other times I write myself right into a corner. So as you started this journey through science fiction writing, not intending to start there, but what drew you to continue writing science fiction?
It's big enough. You get entire galaxies if you want them, or you get entire realms of consciousness, or if you're writing fantasy, you get entire magic systems that you can invent. And although I love mainstream, and in fact my very favorite author is Jane Austen, but nonetheless, it's science fiction is big enough to do the kind of thought experiments that interest me, because this is what SF is good at. Thought experiments in inventive societies to explore real-world situations. And when I wrote 11th Gate, there were a couple of different things I wanted to explore, two particularly. I wanted to explore how a new piece of technology, in this case the 11th Gate, which nobody understands when they stumble across it, gets used in different ways by interested groups and different people, different individuals, which is true of any piece of technology. From fire onward, the day we discovered fire, the crime of arson became possible. Any piece of technology gets its own uses by different groups. I wanted to explore that. And the other thing I wanted to explore is various political and economic systems. This is a space opera, but it's about a lot more than just battles, or at least I hope it is, as your introduction indicated. And thank you for that lovely introduction, incidentally.
I absolutely love the book, so it was a pleasure to read and to do that review because, yeah, what you're describing now is exactly, I felt so immersed in this space opera, but there is such a wonderful tightness to it where you are just right there with the characters, and so I want you to continue what you're saying because I had so much fun reading this book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. The two empires that are more or less at war, accidentally, as you pointed out, one is libertarian and the other is a benevolent dictatorship. The dictatorship, since this is the modern world, is corporate, not monarchical, not royalty. But it's the same thing. And it has the same weaknesses. Even with a benevolent dictatorship, where somebody, the dictator, is really concerned about the welfare of all of its citizens, two things have to happen. One, you have to keep a tight control on everybody to make sure that the dictatorship stays in place. And secondly, the big problem throughout history, you're going to die. The dictator will die. Mm. And then there are other people who will take over who may not have the same benevolence. I wanted to do the weaknesses and strengths of that system and the weaknesses and strengths of libertarianism, which is the Landry's, and see how they fare in clash. And I guess, Bria, there was a third thing I wanted to explore, too, through Philip Anderson, and that's the role of consciousness in the universe. There's a lot of science that says consciousness is in some way woven into the universe. The observer affects a lot of what we see at the quantum level, what we try to measure. And I wanted to include that, too.
And you've done it absolutely beautifully. It is a fast-paced, thought-provoking book that, as I sat there, I had to just, I enjoy meditating on the words sometimes of a good book, so I might go back and reread a paragraph just a couple times, not because I got stuck and didn't understand it, but I just want to soak in what that wonderful paragraph is saying. And I found myself doing that quite a lot with, specifically, you mentioned Philip Anderson. That character has a fascinating arc, and what, and I won't give any spoilers because I want readers to be able to experience it for themselves, but what he goes through and becomes, my goodness, what a creative endeavor you've done with him, and you've made it accessible. I mean, you're talking about the quantum realm, so there is a lot of unknowns, but you did such a wonderful job of taking what is known and creating something that might be plausible, but who knows? Let's just see what happens, right?
We will. But while we're talking about the quantum realm and what might be plausible and the way consciousness is woven into the universe, you had asked me what my next book is, and it deals with those themes too. But this is different than something I've written before because it's my first book co-authored with somebody else. The book is Observer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep, the book is called Observer. It comes out January 10th, and it's co-written with Dr. Robert Lanza. Dr. Lanza is a prominent scientist, a geneticist. In 2014, Time magazine named him one of the most 100 influential people in the world. This book doesn't deal with genetics. Yeah, it doesn't deal with genetics, though. It deals with the way consciousness shapes the universe, starting, and it's built on very solid science, starting with all the way back with the experiments, with the two-slit experiments, where it was determined that electrons can be both waves and particles. And it builds on that, and it builds on it and builds on it and builds on it, till it ends up, I think, in very surprising places. And it's different from the 11th gate in that it takes place on Earth in contemporary or very near future. It doesn't have a galactic empire. It doesn't have a war. It's a different kind of book. But Philip Anderson would probably fit just as well in that universe as he does in the 11th gate.
Ah, okay. How fascinating. You said the title of that book coming out in January. You said The Observer?
Observer. Just Observer.
Just Observer. Oh, I'm going to be looking for that book. Absolutely. And the co-authoring, can you just share a little bit about what has that experience been like to co-author a book? You're saying that's the first time you've done co-authoring?
Yes, it is. And it's, well, I did some short stories a long time ago, but this is the first novel. And it's been a really interesting experience. Dr. Lanza Bob has a theory worked out about consciousness in the universe. And the characters in the book and the actual prose are mine. The ideas behind it are Bob's, and the plot was worked out between the two of us through multiple iterations. So it's a real co-authoring effort, and I think the results are extremely interesting because they are underlaid by actual science. Again, the book is called Observer. Mm-hmm. It's available now for pre-order on Amazon if anybody is interested. It's much different than the 11th Gate, but it has some of the same themes.
Okay, wonderful. I will be putting my pre-order in as soon as we hang up today. So back to the 11th Gate. Am I correct that this is a standalone novel? It is not part of a series.
Right, it is. It is a standalone novel. I have committed trilogy three times, but each time it was accidental. Oh. I wrote the first one in...
I love the theme of accidental here. We're going to go with that.
Yeah, that's what my career has been. I wrote the first book and felt that it wasn't complete, and then I wrote the second book and felt that it wasn't complete. And then I did feel it was complete, and I do feel 11th Gate is complete. So I will not be writing a sequel to this one.
It very much completes beautifully. And sometimes, as much as I enjoy series, the occasional standalone can be so satisfying because it's almost like instead of binging a TV show, you're just watching a movie. And so when you just read a standalone novel like this, you know, okay, things are going to wrap up and there's going to be an ending and there won't be a cliffhanger leaving me waiting months and months for the next book. So that was one of the things I also enjoyed was when I picked up The 11th Gate, I knew it was a standalone. And much of science fiction is series. That's very popular. Tell me...
How did you happen to pick it up? How did you happen to pick this book up?
If I'm remembering correctly, I subscribe to BookBub, so I get the emails... I do get BookBub. I'm remembering incorrectly. It was Chirp, so audiobook. I actually first listened to this as an audiobook, and I believe it was on Chirp as a discounted audiobook, so I went ahead and picked it up and had an absolute blast listening to it, and the narrator was fantastic. I imagine you have listened to your narrator because he did a wonderful job.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because, no, I haven't. I never listened to my own audiobooks.
Really? Tell me why.
Well, it's not because I think they won't be done well. I'm sure that they are because people have told me they are. I would much rather read a book than listen to it.
Okay.
I don't track as well listening. And I read rapidly, and I track much better and remember much better when I read. So I read a lot of books, and I don't listen to any.
Okay, well, fair enough, and I will just be the one to tell you, your narrator is fantastic. I think with science fiction, to your point, though, there were words that I thought, I wonder how that's spelled, because I can imagine, because not all the words are familiar, because in a science fiction space opera like you've given us, there can be, you know, words like polyglot, this planet, and I'm thinking to myself, I can imagine what that word is, but it was nice to pick up. I went ahead and got the mass market paperback of The 11th Gate so that I could look at it and read it as a print book as well to know how these words were, and if there was anything I missed, it was nice to be able to review. So I did enjoy also digging a little deeper once I had the book in hand. So that is an interesting point that you make, because when I listen to any science fiction, fantasy, any otherworldly of any kind, sometimes you don't quite know what the word is because it's a made-up word in the author's realm. So it does, I'm going to just say, what a great way to support these authors, get their audiobook and get their print book or ebook.
Well, of course I'm in favor of that.
Yes, so back to just a couple things about the, just, you mentioned it's not primarily a, let's say, military sci-fi. There's elements of that. But when you were writing some of these spacecraft and even the K-beam that is this advanced technological weapon, tell us a little bit about research. How did you come up with some of these things?
Some of them have been drifting around science fiction for, you know, anybody to use. The K-beam is a put together of various physics things. I do read. I'm not trained as a scientist, but I enjoy reading science. And one of the best ways I have found to educate myself on basic physics is the books of Brian Greene. The Elegant Universe, The Fabric of the Cosmos, and there's a third one too. And those have made a lot of physics clearer to me than they were by my college education somewhere back in the early Jurassic. So, and he has more of the updates on it too. And one of the things that I liked about science fiction when I first discovered it, which I didn't do incidentally until I was age 14, and I'll tell you why in a minute, is that it does start, at least the best of it, in my opinion, with known science or known situations, and then takes a leap off the edge of speculating of what might happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the more plausible that is, the better I like it, which is one reason I do try to do the research behind these things. The reason I didn't discover science fiction until I was age 14 has to go back to the 1950s when I was a child and the world was much different. The elementary school I attended in the library had a girls' section and a boys' section, and all the science fiction was shelved in the boys' section, and the girls didn't go over there. So
how
I didn't see
fascinating
any.
And a little
it was a different
a
world. But when I was 14, I had my first boyfriend, and he was studying to be a concert pianist. So after school, I would go over to his house and hang over the piano while he practiced, you know, hang adoringly, as teenage girls do, or did. Well, I'm tone deaf. I could only hang adoringly for maybe 10 minutes. And then I would kind of edge away to the bookshelves in that room and pull books off at random. His father had a lot of books there. And I pulled down Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End. And within three pages, I was in love, and not with this concert pianist. I was in love with the whole idea of science fiction.
Oh, that is what a fantastic story. I just love that, the idea that you have a lot of accidental serendipitous moments here.
Yes.
In your story. It's a fantastic, and just what a journey it has led you on. Now, I've looked at your bio. You have won 6 Nebulas, 2 Hugos, a Sturgeon, and the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. Tell us a little bit, are those primarily for short stories, for novels?
Primarily for short stories. Probability Space won the, which is a novel, won the John W. Campbell Memorial Award. The Probability series is the hardest SF. I don't mean the most difficult. I mean the most scientifically rigorous SF that I've probably ever written. It's based on physics, and I did a lot of research and invention for that one.
Oh,
the only other time I've ever done more research is the second book in my Tomorrow's Kin series. I needed, as a main character, an Army Ranger. And I did huge amounts of research on reading memoirs from actual Rangers who served in Iraq, reading the Ranger Handbook, and I can now construct a field antenna should this ever become necessary. And then when I was done, I hired an actual Ranger to read it and correct any mistakes with weapons and things so I didn't make a total fool of myself, and he was also very helpful. But I do the research behind the books whenever I can.
Oh, that is fantastic. And to any writers who are listening, this is such fantastic advice, because there are resources just from people we may know. Now, for example, if someone were trying to write a crime fiction, there are probably police officers who would love to talk to them about how not to write, because they get tired probably of seeing things done the wrong way on TV. So I imagine,
yes, I think that's true.
Just to your point that you found an Army Ranger, I just love that, to make sure that you were writing as realistic and plausible as you could. So tell us a little bit about, if a writer is wanting to find you, follow you, what are your websites, social media? How can writers get in touch with you if you have a contact or a newsletter?
I don't have a newsletter. I have a website. It's www.nancycress.com. Unfortunately, it's extremely out of date because I'm not good at this, but there is a contact button. So you can contact me and it will go to my email. I'm on Facebook. And I'm on Facebook with public posts, so I can also be contacted that way.
And I'm going to say it's okay that your gifting is not in the website and social media area, because your gifting is absolutely in the writing. I completely was just swallowed up in the best sense when I was entering your world in the 11th gate. And if an author or a writer were listening in who's maybe brand new to science fiction, do you have any final words of advice for them?
Yes, I do. I've been thinking about this because I teach a lot. I teach writing, SF writing specifically. And I think there are three qualities or four qualities that make a writer, and you can cultivate them. One is a basic level of talent, but you can really cultivate the talent you have. The second is persistence. You have to keep at this, sometimes for a very long time, but you have to keep doing it. Also, going along with persistence, the third one, you have to be open to feedback. If you don't have any professionals and there's no classes near you and you can't afford to travel to a workshop or something like that, at least get people who would like to read science fiction as your beta readers. They don't have to tell you how to fix a book, but they can tell you, for instance, my interest flagged here, or I didn't understand this, or the ending wasn't satisfying. Don't ignore this, especially if you can get more than one beta reader and they end up saying the same thing. Be willing to learn, in other words. I sometimes have a student whose basic attitude is to defend every last comma. Don't do that. Try to be open to learning. And the third, the last thing which you can't control is luck. The right editor has to see the right story at the right moment. Yeah. But if you persist long enough and the work is good, somebody will eventually show an interest in it.
Absolutely fantastic advice from Nancy Crest, a multi-award winning author. And it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Nancy.
Well, I've enjoyed this, Bria. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. And for those who were just tuning in, make sure you visit nancycrest.com. You can see her Facebook connection there and any contact. You can see her awards and be sure to buy her books. They are absolutely wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you again.
Yes, thank you, Nancy. And we've just got a couple minutes left, so I am going to talk a little bit about myself, because I am here guest hosting for Patsy, and if you were listening to Joy on Paper wondering where did Patsy go, she'll be back, don't worry. I'm just here guest hosting today, and so my name is Bria Burton. If you are familiar with the show, I have visited before, and I've been on the other side of the microphone being interviewed by Patsy, so it's been an absolute pleasure to have the opportunity to guest host and interview authors. I am also a science fiction, fantasy, and inspirational author, and I have a website, www.briaburton.com, where you can subscribe to my newsletter right there at the top, and there's a banner that says newsletter sign up. And the reason I'm drawing your attention to that right now is because I am doing a giveaway today at my website. If you're watching on YouTube or on Facebook Live, I'm holding up a book, and I'm giving it away for newsletter signups. So you'll be entered if you sign up today for a chance to win Clone Droid by author Kate Bronson, one of my dear friends. Thank you, and I hope that any writers out there were encouraged today that you can do it. You can keep going and become that writer that you want to be. So thank you, Big Ed. It's been an absolute pleasure to be in the studio today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And be safe out there for those in Florida.